Access number 17965, Mr. Fred Beadle, Reel 1.
Sergeant Major Beadle, Reel 1. Can you tell me if there was a family background of military service?
Yes, that's quite easy, because there was no family background as far as the forces are concerned. Most of my family, parents, uncles, and grandfathers and so on and so forth, were lightermen of the River Thames, which became a protected trade during the war. And there was just nobody at all.
What were your own reasons for joining the army?
I suppose as a young lad, I found it a bit of a job to get something that suited me. I flitted from one job to another quite considerably. We were overcrowded indoors. We were rather a big family. I slept three in a bed. So eventually I decided to join the army.
Do you remember what
for
it
something called? Different, really, I suppose.
Just something different that you haven't done before.
That's right.
Had you done any training at school, any military training or paramilitary training?
No, not at all. There was no such thing in my days.
Had you been in the Scouts or some other organisation like
no.
that?
No.
Do you remember what it was that first put the idea into your head to try the army or something different?
I had toyed with the idea of joining the Navy, to be quite honest, as most of my forebears were on the River Thames and sort of sailors of a sort. In fact, I got as far as the door of the recruiting office, the naval recruiting office in Whitehall, with the idea of going in and inquiring about enlisting. And when I opened the door, there was somebody getting quite a berating over something or the other, which put the wind up me, and I left it and went up the road and joined the army instead.
How were you received in the army recruiting office when you went in there? Did they treat you gently and kindly, or did you have a brisk?
But mainly they were very brisk. They were kind enough. They had quite a lot of people going through. They couldn't afford to give each individual a lot of time, I don't suppose. So I found that quite all right. It was quite amusing in parts. For instance, on the day we were inspected to see if we were fit to join the army, there was a long room in the Army Whitehall recruiting centre with wooden seats down the side, and all us new recruits, or hopefully being new recruits, we were ushered into there, and we had to strip off for our medical inspection. So we're all there sitting on the wooden benches in the noddy. And the most amusing part I found of it was the part where each individual had to hop up on one leg the length of the room and hop back again on the other leg, which wasn't really a pretty sight.
Sounds as though this was quite a thorough medical examination.
Absolutely, yes. Yes. And as far as enlisting is concerned, being under the age of 18, I had to enlist as a boy. And that came down to a band boy in most cases. And being thorough, to see if I'd be any good as a band boy, I was sent with a note to Boosie and Hawks in Denman Street, where they had to test me to see if I had an ear for music. And there was a little wizard old chap who attended to me with gold-rimmed specs. And he took me in the office at the back of the shop, got his tuning fork out, gave the notes, said, right, sing that note. I sang that note. Now sing up the scale and down the scale. Sang us up down the scale. Oh, you'll be perfectly all right, my lad. Signed the chitty and away back to the Whitehall I went.
Had you studied music before anywhere?
No.
Presumably you'd indulge in singing at school.
No.
No.
I'm a terrible singer.
So you had no previous experience at all singing? You'd had no previous experience of singing?
No. Not at all. Well, when I say no, we did have singing lessons at school, of course, as a class, not as individuals.
Yes.
And going back to those days, I remember that I could never get in the pitch with other people. They were either singing a bit too high for me or a bit too low for me. And it's remained to this day, I've got to have my own pitch. As an individual, I could sing fairly well, I suppose, but not with a crowd.
What did your family make of your decision to join the army?
They didn't object or encourage in any way whatsoever. My father, in his quiet way, I think, probably objected, because I had some difficulty. He had to sign a certificate to say he was willing to let me go in the army, which I took back to Whitehall, and eventually I had to go to the recruiting office in Woolwich, which was close to Erith, where I lived at the time, and speak to the recruiting sergeant there. He came home with me and directed my father where to sign this paper or what have you, so that we'd get it right. So I think he was being a bit awkward, because it was a simple thing to do.
Do you have any idea why he might have objected to your going into the army?
Father protections, I suppose. I don't know. My father wasn't one to talk about his feelings or the past. His general answer was, "Well, you don't want to know about that, my boy." And that was that and done with.
But eventually he signed the paper and you were all set to...
That's right, yes. From then on, it was no bother. Eventually I took the oath and got the King's shilling and awaited my orders to join my regiment.
Did you have any idea at that time about how long you would expect to be serving?
Oh yes, that was made quite clear to me. 9 years with the colours and 3 years with the reserve. And the 9 years was to count when I became 18 years of age.
Had you already made a choice of regiment that you wanted to join?
No, but I did think that it would be rather good if I could join the Royal Artillery, because their depot, as you know, is at Woolwich, and that would be close to home. But that was not to be, of course.
How was it that you eventually became a member of the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry? How did you eventually become a member of the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry?
I was just detailed to become a member of it, really, from Whitehall. And
so before you went for your initial training, you were already destined for the Duke of Cornwall's?
Yes, right from the word go. As soon as it was shown that I was fit to join the army and go into a regiment, I suppose, I was told that that was what I would be enlisted in.
You had no choice in the matter?
No choice at all.
Presumably you had no objection either?
No, I was... let's face facts, I didn't know anything really about the army. As far as I was concerned, the army was the army and that was it. And where they posted me or enlisted me into really made no difference.
So you'd taken the oath and been attested. That was in Whitehall, presumably.
Right, yes.
What happened to you after that?
Eventually I got a note to... I had a travel warrant. I was told to join. I would be joining the 2nd Battalion of the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry in Aldershot. They were stationed in Melplaky Barracks in those days. Of course, the Melplaky Barracks is not there anymore. It's some other barracks, called it. On the appointed day, I reported to Whitehall. A guards sergeant marched me from Whitehall to Waterloo Station.
All on your own?
All on my own. And saw me on the train. When I arrived in Aldershot, there was a corporal, a band corporal, waiting to pick me up. And we marched from the station up to Balplaquet Barracks, didn't go in a bus or anything like that. Arriving there about 2 o'clock, the army being the army, I suppose they got things in the right order. First and foremost, I was given a feed, which, being late after the midday meal, I had bully beef, potatoes, gravy, and a bit of spotted dog in amongst the lot. Following the meal, I was marched to the barber shop and had a short haircut. Then I was introduced to my barrack room and fellow boys in the room.
How many of you were there in the barrack room?
Twenty or thereabouts, as dear as damn it, 20. It was the old-fashioned type of barrack room that we went in. They were single deckers. The entrance was in the centre of the barrack room block, and there'd be one barrack room to the left as you went in, another barrack room to the right as you went in. And in the central part of the building, you had the toilets and the washing facilities. The washing facilities consisted of a slate tabletop type of thing with sinks and cold taps. No hot water in those days.
What was your bed like?
Oh, bed was good. I was thrilled about the bed. I had a bed of my own. I didn't have to share it with another couple of brothers, you see. So, yes, the bed was fine. It was the three biscuits. Do you remember that? There were three biscuits, core biscuits. You laid them out, they came to the exact length of the bed. And we had sheets, and I can't remember how many blankets we had. It must have been three, I should think. I say that because each day, when you got up, you had to make your bed up in a certain way. The beds at that time were split halfway along on wheels. You could tip them and push the bottom half in, so you got half a bed. And then you would use these biscuits. Two of them, I've got to think about that. There's two of them on the floor of the half bed, so to speak, and one at the back, so it became like an armchair. And then the blankets and the sheets were folded in a certain way so that everything was neat and tidy and everything was the same.
Was that the first thing you had to do every morning?
That's right, yes.
When you got into this barrack room with the other boys, did you find that they were the same as you? They were mostly from London, or were they from Cornwall, or were they from all over the country?
No, they were from all over the country, I would say. Just thinking about those that I knew there at that time, there was Chalky White, for instance. Now, he came from Woolwich, and I came from Erith, which is not a long way from Woolwich. But then we had a boy new who came from Bristol. We had a Threadkill who came from Salt Ash in Cornwall. And we also had three chaps come from a trading ship. In those days, if they were orphaned, they would go to these trading ships or what have you. And when they became of a certain age, they were marshalled out, I suppose, to join either the Army, the Navy, not so much the Air Force in those days, because it was a little bit before the time of them enlisting widely. So we had three chaps who came from a trading ship. Where they would originate from, I don't know. I don't suppose they knew themselves after that.
How did you get on with the other boys when you arrived?
Oh, very well. But being boys of that age, of course, we had our ups and downs and fisticuffs now and again, which was to be expected. But generally speaking, very pleasant.
Were these fisticuffs allowed by the regiment, or did they try and put a stop to them? The fisticuffs, the occasional fisticuffs. What attitude did the authorities take to them?
What did?
When you said you had the occasional bout of fisticuffs,
yes,
you know, what view of that was taken by the regiment?
Oh yes. Yes. Well, that they took a very dim view of it, actually. Oh. And you'd be put on the charge if you were caught doing this by an NCO. Mm. So they really protected individuals from being bullied, I suppose. That's why I can't understand this bullying business at the present day.
It didn't happen in your day.
It happened, but not so noticeably as it is at the present day, I don't think. You're bound to have a bit of bullying. You always get the big chap who thinks he can beat everybody. But otherwise, no, not a lot. Had more bullying from some of the NCOs than what we did among ourselves.
What sort of things would give rise to this sort of bullying and fighting? Why did it happen?
Why does the chicken lay eggs? No real reason, I don't think. Somebody who disagree with a chap or upset a chap for something or the other, and before you know where you are, you're at each other. I can't say there's anything in particular.
So you arrived that first day and you've been fed and you were shown into the barrack room. What happened after that?
After that, I've got to try and get things in their right order here. I mean, for instance, we didn't get a uniform of any description for a few days, and I'd enlisted in with a three-piece suit on. And even in our civvies, we were expected to do our share of fatigue, such as spud peeling, which was done in those days in the army. And I find myself in my three-piece suit sitting down peeling spuds, which didn't go down too well, of course. But eventually we were issued with canvas, it was in those days, with canvas trousers, a canvas tunic, with a high button-up neck. From then onwards, quite all right, really.
Did you find the uniform comfortable and practical?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, the canvas fatigue suits, as they were known, they were perfectly all right, lovely and comfortable, light, easy to wear. The khaki, of course, with the being light infantry and fast movers, we only had trousers which had half legs in those days. So whereas you'd get some regiments, they would put their trouser leg down and use a putty coming up the leg to then clip the bottom of the trouser and tie up the putty and then turn over the top of the trouser leg over the putty. Instead of doing that, we had three-quarter length trousers. So we put our putties on, our long putties as they were, they're not short putties, which came right up to the knee. We would put our putties on and pull the trouser, three-quarter length leg trouser up so that it overlapped the top of the putties. And you had the same effect as the people doing it with the ordinary trouser.
What was the point of having the putties? What was their function?
Well, I think the object, it was never described as an object of wear them, but I think it must have been a sensible idea for going into battle or what have you. Doesn't matter what the ground is like, you've got to go over it. If it's swampy, you've got to go over it. And with the old ammunition boot, as it was termed in those days, of course, with the studs, the toe caps and heel caps, if you didn't have something to secure the top of the boot, it slopped about a bit and you wouldn't march very far without getting a blister. Now the putty kept the top of the boot in place around the ankle. It gave a bit of support to the lower leg, although when putting a long putty on, you had to be careful not to make it too tight, because you wouldn't march very far if you did, because you get the cramp in your calf. So one had to be very careful. For instance, they used to call us the funny little men who ran to and fro to church because of our fast pace. And on church parade, it was nothing after a few hundred yards to see one or two drop out because they'd over-tightened their putties.
So what you needed was support, but you didn't want it constricted.
Quite. Yes. What they followed that up with a webbing buckle up
an anklet thing,
which was quite hopeless actually, as far as I was concerned. But then they followed that up with a little short putty that just secured the top of the boot. Now that was sensible.
How long did it take you to learn how to get the putties right?
Oh, very short. They all had to finish in a certain place up the leg, as you can well imagine being the army. You can't have the top of the putty finish at the back on one and at the front on another. So you had to experiment a bit and find where you start with the putty to make it finish up where you want to. The putties have a V end, and with our regiment, you put it in so that the point of the V came mid-leg. Then you would take your tape round, your khaki tape round, and tuck it in, and that would hold it in place.
Were you given a formal lesson on how to put the putties on, or were you left to find out for yourself?
I can't remember. I don't remember anybody teaching me how to do it. I was told where the... We were told each wrap around the leg would be about half an inch above the preceding one. And you'd sort of have to keep that regular right the way up the leg until you finished up with the point of the putty finishing where it was needed to be. But I can't remember anybody giving me any instruction in it. It's like you're sort of fending for yourself, I think. I think it's a simple thing which one would remember.
How did you get on with the boots?
Well, I was very fortunate, really. I did quite a lot of marching, and there was only once I got blisters through marching, and that was when war was declared. I was re-enlisted straight away and sent to Bodmin, which was the depot of DCLI, and within a couple of days, we were all formed up and went out on a route march. Now, I had new boots, how to train a bit, knew everything. We hadn't gone very far before I had a blister. That was the only time I had blisters in the army.
So you didn't have a blister as a recruit?
No. Well, of course, being a recruit, a band boy, it wasn't like the men recruits. All their day's work was marching one way or the other. Even if it was only drilling on the square, they were marching, they were walking about. But being a band boy, of course, most of our time was taken up sitting in a barrack room practicing on an instrument or being taught the elementary musical information.
So you'd got to the regiment, you'd got settled into your barrack room, you had your uniform, and you mentioned being trained in music. What instrument did they put you on, Ter?
Well, I was on an instrument which to the best of my memory, they called a treble, which was an instrument midway between a cornet and a euphonium.
Like brass instrument.
Like a small, brass instrument, yes, about like a small euphonium. Nice little instrument to play.
How did you get on with that instrument?
Oh, fine. It was something new. I found I could play after a bit of practice. There's no place like home. And I was told to shut up by the NCO.
Was this the corporal who'd fetched you from the station? Was he the one in charge?
No. We had a sergeant who looked after us. A sergeant... a Sergeant Ray used to instruct the boys in those days. He was a strong disciplinarian, but otherwise very good.
Did you find the discipline difficult, or did you take to it easily?
No, I didn't find it difficult at all. I think as a lad I'd led a pretty responsible life, and I fell into it with no bother.
Was that the same for all the boys, or were there some who found the discipline hard to take?
Oh, no, some lads, it was pitiful to see them. For instance, at that time, there were two brothers joined up. One of them was the youngest one, he was 15. And the other one was, he was 16, I think. It was only just over a year between them. And the youngest one, he just sat on his bed and cried all day. And he was eventually, of course, retired from the army because he was obviously no good.
Just not suited to the life.
That's right. Even as a lad in those days, I found it a bit sad, although some of the chaps, of course, took the mickey out of the poor lad. But he seemed so helpless.
And what happened to his brother? Did he stay on? And,
his brother stayed on, yes. He stayed with the 2nd Battalion, because I went to the 1st Battalion after. Once the recruiting season started to go to India. We were enlisted in those days as bad boys to a particular regiment. And I, like others, was enlisted into the 1st Battalion of the DCLI. In those days, you had a battalion overseas and a battalion at home. The 2nd Battalion was at home at Aldershot, so I joined up in July. I went to the 2nd Battalion to await posting to the 1st Battalion when the trooping season started.
Now, so you had some months at Aldershot between July and December while you were waiting, and you were being taught to play the treble.
Yeah.
What else were you doing while you were in Aldershot?
We did a bit of foot drill, fatigues.
Of course.
we had PT, which was something most of us had never had a go at before.
Do you remember much about the PT, what they were doing with you?
Oh, I was frightened out of my life when I went in the gymnasium and had these chaps roaring at me. It was terrific, but I enjoyed it in the end. I enjoyed the horse work and things like that. I suppose I was pretty athletic even in those days.
Had you been an active sportsman before you joined the army?
No. Not after I left school.
What had you done at school?
At school I played football. I played football for the school, and also my school days, I should say, was spent in Brentford, and I went to Ealing Road Elementary School, as it was then. I played football for the school, and one year I played football for the schoolboys of Brentford against the Rothschilds. You probably know the Rothschild School. The Rothschild School was a pretty select school, and it was financed by Rothschild, And there were a number of these schools around West London. For instance, one in Brentford. There's also one in Kensington. And I think Montgomery attended the one in Kensington at some time or the other during his school days.
So you've been a keen footballer, but you didn't carry that on after you left school?
Oh, no. I had no facilities to carry it on, really. The nearest football team, amateur one, was in Belvedere, which is a fair old stretch. So no, I once I left school,